This is The Book in the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
9 miles north of Jerusalem is a site called Kirbet El Makater, where a small excavation began in 1995 and has turned into a fascinating multi-dimensional site with intriguing biblical connections. In our last program, Dig Director Scott Stripling talked about the coins, the Egyptian scarabs, and the socket stones from the gate that have all been found. He went on to say the subterranean features of the site are also intriguing.
In every square, it seems like we have either a silo or a cistern. In one square, when we had this beautiful cistern that we were excavating with heavy hydraulic plaster that was in perfect condition, we finally made it to the bottom of this, and at the bottom, we were in for a big surprise. Just when we got to floor level, there was a smashed stoneware cup of the typical stoneware vessels from the first century that helped dating it very clearly. So the pottery, the stoneware, and the coins all are very, very clear. This is first century A.D., but when we got to the bottom, shockingly, there was a tiled mosaic floor. No one has ever heard of, I've certainly never heard of or seen, a mosaic floor at the bottom of a cistern. There's just no reason for it. You know, you use bedrock as your floor in a cistern, but lo and behold, that's what we have. Maybe it was a wine vat, but we did an experiment taking a glass of wine and putting some mosaic tiles in it, and after only 2 days, they were badly stained, and there's no evidence of staining. So it's one of those things that scratch our heads and we're trying to figure out, but it is very, very exciting.
So the tile was from the same period. It wasn't from an earlier level that had been covered up.
No, because on the floor itself, we have a broken stoneware cup from the first century.
So you were talking about the stratigraphy of Kirbet El Makater that you have now with this one area that was excavated. What periods are we talking about, and what are the biblical connections?
Okay, good question. The earliest period of occupation is MB3, Middle Bronze 3, so around 1650 to 1670, let's say, the site was constructed, and this is consistent with the building boom across Israel at that time. That's when our fortress is built, and that's when our earliest scarab dates to, a Hyksos scarab, and it continues in occupation down to the end of LB1B, or around the year 1400, which is very consistent with the date of the biblical text. That's when we have the destruction of the fortress. It's then dormant until about the year 1100 or so in the Iron One period, when a small Israelite village is built there, maybe 50 to 60 people living there in 4, 5, or 6 houses. And you have hundreds of those little villages spring up around that time in the central highlands of Israel. It continues on sporadically down into the Iron Age 2A period. There was a major east-west highway that goes right by Kirbet El Makater, and this is called the Joppa Rabbah Highway, or as in Rabbah Amman. And so I'm sure people, even if it wasn't what we would say occupied at the time, there were people stopping by and spending the night. So we'll find stray sherds or lamp pieces or whatever from all the different time periods. Then you have a significant building around 150 to 200 BC. This is when you have the heavy fortifications that are built during the late Hellenistic period. We have clear evidence of earthquake destruction. In about 33 BC, there is a major earthquake. As a result, we see a lot of rebuilding take place. By the first century AD or CE, we see a tower, a very large tower, added on to this fortified city, which is then destroyed by the Romans in AD 69 as part of squelching the Great Revolt. Finally, in the late 4th century, there's a Byzantine church and monastery built on the site.
As far as biblical connections, then, this earliest fortress was begun between the time of Abraham and the time of the Exodus, basically, when the Israelites were in Egypt.
Well, that's right. It's a period we refer to as the Hyksos rule. These are foreign Semitic rulers that had come into Egypt and sort of taken over. And when the Bible says there arose a Pharaoh who knew not Joseph, then I believe that's when the Hyksos were expelled from Egypt. Then the Israelites are placed into bondage at that time. So the Hyksos are helpful to understanding the background of the patriarchal narratives, if you will.
So that was the fortress that existed by the time of the Exodus and was destroyed.
That's right. The scarabs indicate that the king of Ai, if we're correct on the identification, had been given authority by Pharaoh with the scarab to act on his behalf.
And then we have an Israelite village that seemed to last for quite a long time.
One of these small villages, and if I'm right about the New Testament identification of Ephraim of John 11:54, then by connection, 2 Chronicles 13, I believe it's verse 59, tells us that there was a village named Ephron. So I believe that would be the name of the Iron Age village at the site.
Then in the time of Jesus, 1st century B.C., 1st century A.D., as we've talked about what existed on that site in previous interviews, it seems as if this was a fairly well-to-do community.
They were very affluent, Gordon. In fact, there's been some discussion in were there clay roofing tiles during the first century. But the New Testament, for example, says that there was. When you have the story of them breaking through the roof to lower a man to Jesus, the Greek that broke through the karama, so the ceramic roof, at Kirby on the Cotter, we have clear evidence of clay roofing tiles being used during the first century, which is, I think, a sign of affluence. The jewelry, the cosmetic applicators, the prosperous economy, making and selling wine and oil and so forth, are all indicators that these people were doing quite well.
And then the period of the Byzantine monastery, I think you suggested in earlier interviews that this may have marked an event associated with the life of Abraham or the patriarchs.
Because this is one of the earliest churches built in Israel, the early Byzantines made this a priority. And, I mean, we're talking 4th century. Why? I mean, were they trying to identify the site of Genesis 12 and 13 with the patriarch Abraham, or was it Joshua 7 and 8, or both of them, or maybe even a connection with Jesus? Unfortunately, our mosaics within the church were badly damaged. Now, let me say a word about what we did in the church this summer. Knowing it was the last season, we went in and removed the flooring. So we had some in-situ flooring in 4 or 5 places in the church. We removed that flooring so we could get underneath it into a sealed context. And in archaeology, a sealed locus is most important because we know that the material underneath can be dated and it hasn't been touched since the time that floor was laid. We found a lot of interesting stuff under the floors. For example, clear evidence confirming my hypothesis of an earlier church. So it appears that the earthquake of 383 AD brought about the destruction of that first church. And because we have pieces of the marble chancel screen under the floor of the church, it makes no sense for those things to be under the floor of the church had there not been an earlier church structure there.
For those who've just joined us, we're talking with Scott Stripling, the dig director of the excavations at Kirbit El Makater, about the results of the 2016 excavation season, which is just over. This was the last season at Kirbit El Makater. You're moving on to another site. But as far as what the future holds for Kirbit El Makater, is this a site that could possibly be turned into a pilgrimage location?
Sadly, Gordon, it cannot. We are in Area C, which is the disputed territories within the West Bank, and the site suffers badly from vandalism. It's really not on the radar of anybody to protect. We have encroachment on the site from the local village cutting in and building agricultural terraces on the site and houses getting closer and closer. I'm afraid that our publications will tell the history. And probably 10 to 20 years from now, people will not be able to visit and see the ruins there. We have to remember that the goal of archaeology is not excavation, it's publication. If all we excavate, we have destroyed the evidence and made it inaccessible to others. It's our responsibility to history to publish and to do so in a timely manner. We are, in fact, working on final publications already, and we hope over the next 5 years to release 3 to 4 volumes on Kirbit El Makater.
So what are the plans for the future at a new site?
Well, we're really excited to announce our excavation at Shiloh, and this is another 9 miles north. So right now, Makater is 9 miles north of Jerusalem. We'll be going 9 miles further north to the very important site of Shiloh. Was the center of Israelite worship for over 300 years, And it connects nicely with our mission at ABR, because we know that after the conquest that everybody went to Shiloh, and this is where Joshua gave the tribal allotments and where the tabernacle was set up. So a lot of what we learned at Kirbit Nissi and Kirbit El Makader will now be able to put into a larger context of the highlands, excavating our third site. So it's terribly exciting. The Antiquities Authority and the local community have rolled out the red carpet for us. And so we'll be starting next May at Biblical Shiloh.
You said you did have a little bit of work to do for a week or two next December to close out Kirbit El Makader?
That's right. The final opportunity, we're calling it, to work at Kirbit El Makader. So anyone who's wanting to join us for a winter dig, we would just love to have them. We're going to finish a few projects that we did not get finished this summer and try to bring things to a tidy close there at the site.
Well, getting back to Shiloh, with it being the location of the tabernacle in the period of the Judges, have there been previous excavations on this site?
There have. In the 1920s, there was a Danish team that worked at Shiloh. Then in the 1980s, Israel Finkelstein, who's an Israeli archaeologist, excavated for three seasons as well. And the Antiquities Authority themselves have done some work in recent years. So there have been a lot of good and interesting finds. For example, there's a Bronze Age wall with Iron Age habitation built up against it, which is exactly what we have at Kirbit El Makader. One of the things we're going to be doing at Shiloh is introducing wet sifting. This will be the first time outside Jerusalem, to my knowledge, that wet sifting has been used. And so we'll be able to do some things that we could not do at Makader because of the absence of water there.
Talk a little bit about the importance of wet sifting.
This was introduced by the Temple Mount Sifting Project, and I worked for a couple of years as a supervisor at that project at Emek Sudim in Jerusalem. What we discovered was that after things are dry sifted, then if you're able to take a high-pressure hose and wash them off, that you will see a tremendous amount that you have been missing. Inscriptions, cuneiform tablets, coins, jewelry, beads, that looked like little clumps of dirt. So we were shocked at what we had been missing, so I'm eager to take my experience of working there and bring it to bear on Kirbit El Makader. In fact, Finkelstein's dump piles from the 1980s are in our section of the tell, and so we very well may go back and sift his old dump piles there. I'll give you an example. He found an inscription on an Egyptian idol or goddess, if you will, that says, "Lord, bless the temple of," and then the inscription is broke right there. And so Shiloh, of course, you know, mention of the temple of blank. So one wonders if in his dump pile that when we wet sift that, will we find that missing word? Is it going to say the temple of Yahweh at Shiloh? You know, these are some of the possibilities of wet sifting.
Scott Stripling says next year's Shiloh excavation will be the first excavation to introduce the wet sifting process to a dig outside of Jerusalem. The Kirbit El Makader excavation is sponsored by Associates for Biblical Research. You can find out more about their work from the link we have on our website at radioscribe.com. You can also keep up to date on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology by subscribing to our quarterly magazine, Artifacts. That link also is on our website at radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through Biblical Archaeology on The Book in the Spade.
The Book in the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.